Welcome everybody to episode 7 of Meaty Sandwich Reheated. I'm Chris.
And I'm Kyle.
And we are none too soon and none too late. We are, our podcast arrives precisely when it means to.
Yes, we're the confused wizards of podcasting that way.
We are. I still someday, side note, want to do the spellcast with None the Wiser, who's a wizard who just critiques, like, pop culture, like, representations of magic. And he has
I like that idea.
Yeah, he's None the Wiser. He has a younger brother who sometimes shows up on the podcast called Nonetheless. And he basically, like, the goal is that I would have, like, actual famous, like, actors who've portrayed magicians or, like, magic beings to come on the show. So he, like, He would take Daniel Radcliffe to task because he would have an axe to grind about the whole Harry Potter franchise. He would be quite enamored with Gandalf and Ian McKellen, feel like that was very well represented.
Yeah, he'd be like the Joe Biden of the show for Parks and Recreation.
Exactly. He would have very mixed feelings about Nick Cage, but he ultimately would like feel kinship with Nick Cage and feel like he was in the right place. And then
Nick Cage would fit in with some magicians.
And then the joke, it wouldn't be that it was like from the Sorcerer's Apprentice. Was that the one he was in?
I think.
Yeah, the punchline would have to be that he was talking about like Ghost Rider the whole time. And then like you blindside Nick Cage with that.
Benedict Cumberbatch because he's a Sorcerer Supreme.
Ooh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
And of course, I mean, he's classic, just like wizard, he always talks high and like a wizard would talk all the time. And I'm sure that wouldn't get annoying whatsoever as people would listen to that.
Well, this sounds like a great idea for you to do once you get famous enough to get famous people on a show.
There we go. I mean, it's one of those like, which comes first, the chicken or the famous person? Like you have to, maybe you just start asking them.
Well, you need to like become a meme or something. Whatever gets you famous fast enough, you know. If you want to put on a Chewbacca mask or something like that, I'm willing to go with it. And then once you're famous, you just drop the hammer with, by the way, I've got this great idea for a podcast.
There you go. It's kind of like you get so frustrated listening to some podcasts like Welcome to Night Vale because you listen to the concept and you're like, man, this is so good and obvious, and I should have thought of this first. And the only reason you'd ever be mad is because you didn't think of it first. And well, Welcome to Night Vale is one of those big ones for me, where I'm like, oh, this concept is so good, and I obviously could have done this if I had got here first, but they got here first, and kudos to them.
Narrative podcasts are really kind of taking off, like narrative fiction, like scripted format, like, you know, like old radio shows. I like that idea. I want those to become a thing.
Pop culture is cyclical. I think
Max Fun, the Max Fun Podcast Network, has one of those now. It's called like The Bubble. It's like a post-apocalyptic or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, that's not what this podcast is.
No, this is the glorious episode 7. Return to form.
This whatever season, form. Season two now?
Season I guess you two. Could
say. So at this rate, we are on par with a hit British television series.
In fact, we're beating hit British television series.
Right, we got back to work a lot faster.
Yeah, I mean, we had 6 episodes to begin with. That's like, whew, that burned through 3 series worth right there.
Yeah.
Wasn't there like a Simpsons joke or some show had a joke about, it's talking about the longest running British show ever. It had like 9 episodes.
That was The Good Place.
That was The Good Place?
That was The Good Place. That was Tahani's favorite show. I loved that joke. That was a joke that I fell in love with instantly because I did not know as a kid that was how television worked in the UK.
Yep.
And when I found that out, when I started watching things outside our borders, I was wondering, how does that work? How do you grow anticipation for a show when it's over that quickly?
Yeah. So, since we're on the illustrious episode 7, season 2, episode 1,
Oh no.
What shall we talk about today, Kyle?
Well, let's start with the news that dropped today, which we're recording this on Wednesday. Henry Cavill's done playing Superman, and Ben Affleck is officially done playing Batman. And
which is interesting, because I didn't know that Henry Cavill ever started playing Superman.
Oh.
Oh,
how long have you been waiting to use that one?
Actually, I thought of it just this moment, but also I knew that from the bottom of my heart since I saw Man of Steel. Cause yeah, it's kind of funny. Everyone's like, oh dear, he's no longer Superman. It's like, guys, he's never been Superman. Like, they have yet to actually do Superman in the current DC universe. They have a guy named Superman. That's not Superman. We all know that's not Superman.
I do kind of like the Superman that we got during the finale of Justice League was finally getting close to what Superman's supposed to be. And I ascribe Henry Cavill to the same place that I do Hayden Christensen. It's not his acting that's the problem. It's that he's given nothing to work with.
He would be a great Superman if he were allowed to do a Superman movie.
Yes, and absolutely.
They did not give him material to be Superman. They gave him material to be, you know, angsty super character.
Yeah, I mean, this news doesn't really surprise me at all. I thought the writing on the wall was pretty easy to read. Because, I mean, Affleck has spent the last year steadily edging backward away from the Batman.
Yeah.
And Cavill, he got a little bit vindicated regarding the whole CG upper lip fiasco when Mission Impossible Fallout actually did really well.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's... Didn't I hear that he's also going to star in the Netflix Witcher series?
Yes, he got cast as Geralt.
That seems like that was his cue to say, you know, I'm kind of done with the tights and whatnot. At this point, Superman's kind of more a liability than anything else for his career.
I know a lot of people were down on him getting to be Geralt because they're like, oh no, did we only get one chance for Geralt to show up and that's who's going to be? And like, it could be worse. I mean, if I were going to pick Geralt, I don't know because I haven't played the Witcher game. But if I understand correctly, Geralt is supposed to have like very limited emotional range. So it's like, why not Keanu Reeves, who is an amazing actor who portrays that like that's his range and he's excellent in that range.
Yeah, I mean, I know that a lot of people wanted Keanu over Cavill.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I like Cavill as an actor when he's in other things, like not as Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And even I don't really mind him as Superman so much as I just mind the way that Superman is written.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's in stuff like Man from U.N.C.L.E. or as far as I heard, Mission Impossible, I hear he's really good in that one, and he's capable of a lot more range than what we've mostly seen out of him.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I haven't played the Witcher game, so I don't know anything about that, but from what I can tell, it seems like he got the offer for that, and that was the cue for him to either ask for more money to be Superman, or bail.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of fine, I think, because they're already at a point where I'm pretty sure the Flashpoint movie is supposed to be the cleanup project. Like, that's going to be their Days of Future Past, where whatever in the continuity is not working and people don't like, they can just get rid of it via time travel.
And it's just like, I think once you've had to get to a Days of Future Past, you need to realize that your movie franchise didn't work, and you're basically the Dark Universe at this point. Like,
it's
embarrassing is what it is that DC wanted so badly to do what Marvel did. And it's, you know, it's fair comparison because that's what they were trying to do. They even got Joss Whedon to try to jump in and save their butts in Justice League. Not that I have a lot of nice things to say about Joss Whedon anymore, but they're at least trying to go the Marvel route. It was apparent, like they started getting jokier after Batman vs. Superman, and they realized that Wonder Woman played better when it was basically built like a Marvel movie in a lot
of
regards.
Very much. I often think that Wonder Woman is kind of their facsimile of Captain America First Avenger.
Yeah, it's totally their thing still. Like, I'm not trying to diminish what Wonder Woman did. It had the same concept of, hey, let's take a more personal story about a larger-than-life character and a larger-than-life event, but somehow it still feels very personal. Let's take this character, let's translate this character pretty much one-to-one as you'd want to see, from the comics to the big screen. Let's get an actress that everyone ultimately really likes. In some ways, people didn't expect to like her. I didn't expect to like her. I thought she was pretty good. And let's just make a really good movie that ultimately is also, like, best part of all is it's made by kind of a lesser known director who now, you know, she has basically been able to put that on her, you know, achievement walls. Look, I have one of the best received, best, you know, grossing superhero franchises. Like, I think it's considered the best origin story, like, highest grossing origin story for comic movies. It's like, that's a really cool achievement to be able to say. Like, and similarly, like, cause Marvel kind of had been doing that with a lot of these lesser known directors with like, Taika Waititi and James Gunn and, you know, a couple of the other ones.
Honestly, I love the fact that this is happening for Patty Jenkins because she had her big critical acclaim and now she's having her big box office moment. So,
yeah.
You know, at this point forward, after she's done with her DC movies, whenever that might be, you know, the world is her oyster and I think that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I honestly, you know, and you can tell that they have remnants of the DCEU that they have to stick it out with. I mean, they got Aquaman coming up. They've got Wonder Woman 1984, which sounds like a great concept, and that one I'm kind of excited for.
Actually, the only one I'm really jonesed for is Shazam. That trailer,
that does look like fun.
Which that trailer is absolutely Marvel style.
Like, oh, yeah.
That movie's clearly going to be a Marvel-esque movie. And I'm okay with that because I think at some point we're going to have to get past calling them like Marvel style superhero movies and just let them be movies. And like, this is what the superhero genre has to be to be successful. I mean, like, unless other movies can start to skirt around that, because you still have some superhero movies that are darker. And that's the thing that kind of bugs me is that, you know, DC was going for this gritty, realistic, you know, atmosphere, because the Dark Knight trilogy seemed to pull it off okay, but we saw like the pinnacle of the dark gritty with something like Super.
That's about as dark as it can get.
Yeah, and that was a really good movie that I never want to see again.
Exactly,
because it was so. Well done. It was one of those like, woof, you got me. You hit me hard and I don't want to take that punch again. Which it's a big compliment. I'm trying to make that as a big compliment. At least that's how they should take it. But then you have Snyder doing stuff like, Watchmen, which I liked the film version of Watchmen mostly because I don't hold the comic on a pedestal in the same way that some people do. I was like, no, this is totally doable, and I thought they did a pretty darn good job representing the graphic novel in film form.
I think that it's the best adaptation of The Watchmen that you are going to get in one movie.
Yeah.
It does misread a lot of the tone and a lot of the message of the book, but I think aesthetically it totally gets it right. I love the way that movie looks, and It's style over substance, but that's kind of fine if you're not going to get the plot and you're not going to get the substance of Watchmen. Get the style right, and at least that's fun to look at.
Yeah.
Like, I view that movie the same way I view most of the Snyder movies that I enjoy, which is, that was very lovely put together. Guy knows how to put a flick together.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, maybe he's just doing the wrong material, I think. I don't hold anything against him. I just think that he misunderstands a lot of the material he gets.
He does, and I mean, he's had some really good moments here and there. I mean, I like 300, same as anyone else who was a high school boy. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, we saw that at the right time.
Yeah, we saw it at the right time where we were all, oorah, this is cool, this is what manliness is. And now it's like, okay, this is a quaint, like,
it's look a parody of itself now.
Yeah, and, I mean, I never saw Sucker Punch, but, I mean, I know people, well, I know a person who will defend Sucker Punch to the end of Bob's dying breath. But
I don't know. I won't defend Sucker Punch myself, but you know what one of his best movies is his Dawn of the Dead remake. That's actually one of the best remakes I've ever seen.
It's interesting that there are a lot of movies like that that are lesser known movies, that like smaller projects from directors who are known for these big, stupid, overblown things. Like Michael Bay is known for his big, stupid, overblown Transformers movies and producing the TMNT movies and et cetera. But it gets totally lost that, like, oh, by the way, Michael Bay makes extremely good smaller films when he's given the opportunity. Basically, when he takes the opportunity for himself. I think like Pain and Gain was that one. You did?
I had heard a lot more positive buzz about that one than I usually do about his projects.
Yeah, it's just kind of fascinating. And the same happened with M. Night Shyamalan, I think, is the quintessential version of this, where when he was doing his small little projects, and I mean, yeah, The Sixth Sense, it seems weird to call it a small project, but it was an unknown. And that was huge. And then
Unbreakable. It was a horror movie. Horror movies are traditionally a lot smaller in scale than, than say something like The Last Airbender.
Yeah. And I mean, Unbreakable was a great follow up. And then he started getting bigger and bigger and stupider. And everyone's like, whoa, this is not working anymore. Why is this not working? And that was the biggest twist of all, was that none of it was working.
And I think the biggest one that he had was After Earth. I think that was probably the peak of the mountain.
It was fantastically awful.
I
saw clips of it here and there because I'm visiting my parents, and my dad was watching parts of it. And I'm like, why are you watching this? And he's like, well, because it's on. I'm like, it's not on. You selected it on demand. Why did you do that? And he didn't really have a defense for that other than like, well, it's a thing I can have in front of my eyes. It's like, well, that's about the most glowing praise you can give that movie, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, but then when he came back and he got to like, no, I'm going to make a real strong character piece. I mean, Split. Have you seen Split yet?
I finally just recently watched that one, actually, and I was so pleased with it.
That one surprised me, and I went into it thankfully not knowing that it was going to tie into the Unbreakable universe. And I thought
I did get that ruined for me, but that probably would have put it a lot, it would have gotten a much more glowing review from me than it did if I had kept that secret, but it's still a lot of fun. And really what I like about it is that Shyamalan just kind of steps aside and lets James McAvoy drive the whole movie, which that's what you should do in that situation. That was good instincts on M. Night.
And that was a showcase for McAvoy to show, like, okay, you probably all know me from a couple select roles, like the weird Professor X that doesn't feel like Professor X, but let me show you what I can really do.
I think I remember him as the young Leto in Children of Dune, the sci-fi miniseries of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, never did get to see him fulfill that character's destiny. I don't want to spoil that in case you end up reading those books.
Probably not.
Probably not. He turns into a giant friggin' sandworm.
Oh, no, yeah, awesome. I heard about that. That's right.
Yeah, that's that character. James McAvoy was going to turn into a giant sandworm.
Maybe someday.
Maybe someday if the new Dune movie takes off.
There you go. Speaking of comic book movies, I just watched Deadpool 2.
Oh, I still haven't seen that one.
Oh my gosh. It is, pretty much everything that the first one did well, the second one also does well. It's kind of strange because a lot of the best jokes from the second one are pretty much just the jokes they made in the first one again. I'm okay with it because it kind of works for Deadpool. The ending reel was pretty much put this way over the top for me. Like, the movie itself was raw and kind of strange in places, had some great moments, great characters. I mean, all the fourth wall breaks worked, but then like the credit sequences just like threw this over the edge. It was like, this is awesome. And I have no idea what of it will actually is that Fox, and now like it's gonna go to Disney, but like the mutant universe that had been built that was like building more steam for some dumb reason because those stupid X-Men movies kept making enough money, they keep kicking this forward, and we're still getting that stupid, ill-advised Dark Phoenix movie.
I think the Apocalypse movie was kind of the one that put people off of the series.
I thought people were really bad. People were off of it after the first couple.
Like, I really loved First Class. That movie was great.
Well, yeah, First Class brought people back because it was like the first one was before the comic book movie revolution, and then the second one was well received because it was bigger, better, and you know, more enjoyable with other fan favorite characters. Then the third one was, it was hot garbage.
Yeah, it was a mess. It was a case of a couple of people being replaced at the last second, and mm-hmm. Brett Ratner, I heard, tore the script apart and did a whole bunch of nonsense with it, and it's just a not very well thought out film.
No.
Not very watchable either.
It's, I remember liking it in theater because I'm stupid and I will like just about anything in the theater. And that one, rewatching, I was like, ooh, not as good. X-Men First Class, I did like.
Well, the interesting thing about Last Stand is that when you're watching in the theater and you get the spectacle kind of taking you over, it does kind of have the same quality as Infinity War, where it just kind of turns into a, hey, look, it's that guy scenario for like an hour and a half.
Yeah. I like First Class. I did not like Days of Future Past at all.
It doesn't hold up to multiple viewings. I loved it the first time out, but after a couple of viewings, it also felt like a big giant mess.
I don't know. It just did a lot of weird things. And then now that I didn't even bother with Apocalypse. And everything I've heard about the Dark Phoenix movie, I'm like, why? It's a shame because anyone who's read the Dark Phoenix saga is just sitting here just rolling their eyes like, they have yet to figure out how to do this. They already tried it once with X-Men Last Stand, and that was ill-advised. And now they're trying this again, and they're misunderstanding what made the Phoenix so cool. And, they're missing all the pieces that are necessary to this, that it's not just, and then Jean Grey has this dark power. It's like, no, guys, like, Jean gets the Phoenix Force because she sacrifices everything for the X-Men. And then she suddenly gains the powers of like one step below God, but she's only like 20 something. And it wrecks her because she has this dark side to her, not the Phoenix side, but like the dark side anyone has and any 20-year-old has. And she doesn't know how to handle this new maturity, and suddenly she has the power to do anything and everything, and she loses her damn mind. And it's a very good story. I mean, who had to tell a good story?
Anybody who has never done a deep dive into the X-Men and is looking for a place to start, Dark Phoenix Saga is a great place to start, honestly.
I mean, the best thing, my recommendation here for your extended homework, go watch Comic Book Girl 19's Epic History X-Men Volume 1, 2, and 3, which covers everything. The first volume covers everything up to the Phoenix Saga, the second one covers the Phoenix Saga, and the third one covers the Dark Phoenix Saga, and it's pretty darn good.
That's a great comprehensive series.
That's very, very good, and I was sad that she decided not to continue after that. I mean, granted, that's kind of the story that she wanted to tell was to the Dark Phoenix Saga, because that's kind of where I think a lot of comic fans kind of ended there with X-Men. I kind of ended after the Dark Phoenix Saga for myself, I started with like the Dark Phoenix Saga and then ended there too. It's like, okay, this is the most X-Men I can really do. Like, I've kind of peaked with my X-Men stories.
Well, while we're on the subject of Marvel Comics, there was a little bit of news that dropped recently about Spider-Man, specifically, I'm looking at my notes here. this December, Otto Octavius is going to leave behind the Doc Ock persona and become the Superior Spider-Man again.
I remember reading a little bit of Superior Spider-Man. I think the first volume or two.
Yeah. It passed me by. I didn't read the original run, but it was a very inventive idea. I got told extensively about it, and I liked the concept.
It was an interesting concept. It was, you know, classic comic book, like, nonsensory, where it's like, what if the villain took over the body of the hero, and the hero was still in the mind, but not active? And it was interesting to see, like, to see one of Spider-Man's all-time, long-time villains get in his mind and walk a mile in his shoes and realize, oh my gosh, I get it, and finally, like, have that moment of getting it and learning to deal with being Spider-Man and learning to try to keep everything, you know, in check. And it was really, it was an interesting character study, and I couldn't handle it much longer than what I read for it, because I was like, okay, this is about as far as I want to take this, because shaking up the status quo, unless like you really nail it home, like I want you to go back to status quo. Eventually I want to get back to it. It's
a temporary kind of thing. It's not something that I could do for a long stretch, but apparently a lot of people dug it enough for them to bring it back.
And it was a good concept. I think it's kind of like with a lot of dramas you see, the audience is always struggling to get back to equilibrium, and as soon as you throw too much change, the audience is eventually going to start to wobble and get so unbalanced that they're pissed. And chaos happens. We saw this with stuff like Dexter and House and other long-running shows.
I'm totally stealing what you just said for my my TV review of HBO's Succession. That's what I've been watching this week.
Ooh, I really want to see that one.
I recommend it. It's a good show. It's a smart show. It's kind of a spiritual successor to the 80s you know, affluent people behaving badly, primetime soap opera thing, like Dallas or Dynasty or Falcon Crest. So, you know, somebody always is calling a proxy or calling a board meeting to vote on something or other. It's very boardroom battles and backstabbing stuff. It's kind of that same thing where the equilibrium, if you don't achieve balance by the end of a couple of episodes, then an audience can't sit still for it. It's too much.
Well, you have to, like, the first season, you have to establish the equilibrium, and then all subsequent seasons, you can decide how off balance do you want to put everything. And Dexter did a very good job for the first half of the show, where you got your first season establishes this is equilibrium. Or to some extent, this is the formula. And then the second season played with it a bit and like, whoa, got us off balance, but then eventually balanced it out by the end of the season. Third season also unbalanced in a different direction, but then rebalanced. Fourth season was like perfect equilibrium, exactly what you expect it to be, just really intense. It's spinning really, really fast, because apparently the analogy is now a top as well. That's what I mean. Everyone's following this.
We've got a lot of analogies going.
Yeah, and then the fifth season, the top basically wobbles back and forth, and at the end of the fifth season, it doesn't hit equilibrium again. And into the sixth season, the top basically fell over and started rolling around on the ground, and you chase after it to try to catch it, and a lot of people are like, I'm not chasing after that stupid thing. And then the seventh season is like, okay, we set the top back up, we're spinning it again. Like, no, dude, we already... It's gone. And then like the eighth season is like, all right, screw it. We didn't want to spin this top anyway. And it's, that's what happens with the audience. The audience will not return if you stop spinning the top the right way. I liked it because I appreciated the writing, because I felt like this is not fun, but it is correct in terms of like character. But people, like, audience always fights to get back to equilibrium. The same with Spider-Man. Like, there's a certain equilibrium with Spider-Man you want, and people fight that. And the same thing happened. We've seen it with Spider-Man over and over again. People were not happy with Black Suit Spider-Man because it changed too much. And they weren't happy when Spider-Man got the movie powers of being able to just, you know, thwip-thwip without needing to have web cartridges. Like, that was a big equilibrium change.
That's
and
true.
They had to retcon that. People were getting mad with the Clone Sagas because that was too much change. People threw a fit about One More Day or New Day or whatever it was where Mary Jane and he got divorced because of a deal he made with the devil. And it was like, okay, but that was like, does that mean everything that happened didn't happen? It's like, well, technically it did, but didn't. Like, oh boy. Like that changed way too
much. That was right around Civil War, wasn't it?
That was following Civil War. That was like directly following Civil War. That's how they got back to
for Marvel.
That was how they were attempting to get back to equilibrium, where they're like, okay, well, Peter Parker revealed his identity to the world in Civil War, so how do we retcon that? Because we don't want people to know that anymore, because that was somewhat essential to Peter Parker as a character, is that he has to be anonymous and has to deal with this quietly, and like that's his thing, because if you don't have that, it's kind of strange. And unless it's like the movie versions, like the current Marvel MCU Peter Parker, which I like a lot because they established in different equilibrium that, oh, these characters know he's Spider-Man. He already knows the Avengers and they all know that he's Spider-Man. Like that works for me because they established this is how this top is spinning. But in the comics, they had to change too many things, and once they did Superior Spider-Man, like, it's still interesting to see, like, whoa, that, where is this gonna wobble to? But eventually it has to get back to equilibrium. Like, Peter Parker's gotta regain his own body and not be dead, and Doc Ock has to get ejected from that, and that's how it works.
Well, the way they've got it going now with, this new run of it is it's gonna be its own separate book, so I'm not really sure how they're going to handle that alongside a regular Spider-Man book, if that's even what they have. I haven't picked up a Marvel or DC book in a long time. I'm always just buying, like, smaller stuff, indie stuff, or local stuff. But, speaking of Spider-Man, that can shift us towards games.
Sure can.
Not that I've played the Spider-Man PS4 game, because I don't got a PS4. Do you play that game? Do you got one of those fancy machines?
I do have a PS4. I haven't played Spider-Man on PS4 yet. I want to very badly because it looks amazing. I have been
really
playing
does.
Other, huh?
It really does.
Yeah, I have instead, like, my main method of playing on the PS4 is to check things out from the library, because I have a great library system over here in Clackamas County.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is a lot of people don't realize it. So I can check out, I can reserve most games and get them, like even big games, and get them within a week or two. Like I just reserved Final Fantasy XV and Shadow of Mordor, and they both came in at the same time, like immediately. I'm like, oh dang it, these are two games that I can't finish in a week. Singularly together, yeah. I definitely can't. And of course, because I'm so indecisive, I haven't even started playing either of them after having for 3 days now. But because no one else is reserving these ones, I can easily check them out again. And then my library is about to have like a month long shutdown while it's moving because it's renovating itself. So I'm going to get like an extended, anything that's like checked out that the due date would be at the time the library closes down, it like shifts it all the way to when the library opens. So that's going to be my secret plan.
Artful dodges on the library system.
I am. If I've done this thing, if I've set this up correctly, I will also have Dragon Ball FighterZ for a month. And the nice thing is, like, the library system has saved me so much on games, especially on the Switch. That's the other thing, is a lot of people don't know that the library gets Switch games in. Because PS4 games make sense. There's a lot of ones that I can get, and ones I mentioned are, like, a couple of years old. And it's like, oh, well, obviously no one's going to play those because you can get those for $5, like at a CD game exchange or something. True. But Switch games are in the library, and I've been getting some newer ones. Like, I played all of Kirby Star Allies on the Switch, a $60 game. I get everything I wanted out of it in a week for free. And it's like, yes, take that. Save me some money. And, you know, when you're gaming on a budget, you got to find out how to game on a budget.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I eventually do want to play the new Spider-Man game, because everything I've heard makes it sound awesome. Spider-Man 2 on the GameCube was my favorite superhero game until Arkham Asylum and then Arkham City. Because those games were great too, but something about Spider-Man 2 on the GameCube was magical. And everyone just points back to the web swinging. The story in that was pretty herder, and a lot of the side missions were pretty dumb, but it didn't matter because they made just the simple act of swinging through the city so darn good.
Yeah.
And from what I hear, the people have been telling me, Spider-Man on PS4 basically made web swinging even better than that. And a lot of people are saying, like, yeah, I mean, it's weird. This game has pretty much every single bad cliche of a game, like, or tired cliche that everyone's like agreed, yep, this is just not really that inventive or creative or whatever. And everyone's like, also, P.S., we don't really care because this web swinging is so much fun and the game is just so much fun. It all just works.
Well, yeah, I mean, you gotta think back, and I'm actually replaying through the Arkham games right now, and I just restarted Asylum. I'm not sure if that game would be as critically acclaimed as it is if it were not a Batman game.
It
happens to be a game that simulates being Batman better than any game had before it, but if you took Batman out of the equation and it was just a really good stealth/beat-em-up game, would it be as well remembered?
And I don't think so. I mean, that's always been the classic debate with a lot of games. So you look at, I mean, even the big ones like Zelda or Mario, and you're like, would this game be good if it didn't have these characters in it?
And oh yeah, you know, I'm sure that you might agree that Breath of the Wild probably wouldn't be considered a great success if it were just an independent IP.
No, and that's one of my big reasons I think the game is, I was going to say the game is trash, which is not fair. The game is not trash. I have
Whoa. I have
strong opinions on Breath of the Wild.
Strong opinions on Zelda games.
The main one is that Breath of the Wild took Legend of Zelda's face and stretched its skin over its face and wore it like a mask and said, what do you mean I'm Legend of Zelda? It's like, no, you're not. You're a good game that is masquerading as a better game. Like, that's right, critically acclaimed, game of the year. And it's like, okay. Anyway. Spider-Man. I hear as well that one of the most important aspects of this game is that you can really feel like Peter Parker with unrequited love.
Are you referring to my news item?
You're referring to your news item. Take it away, Kyle.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody saw this. Suddenly I feel like Jay Leno. Did you see this? Did you hear about this? In the new Spider-Man game, you might have seen the hashtag big romantic gesture that they put into the game. It's Insomniac. Is that the name of the studio?
Yes.
Yeah, Insomniac hid a proposal as an Easter egg on a theater marquee in the game's New York City. Some fan dude named Tyler Schultz asked back in May to have a proposal to his girlfriend Madison appear in the game, and Insomniac totally put it in there because their art people are, I guess, just really groovy.
But you'd be surprised how many game developers like totally jump at the chance to do this kind of stuff.
I mean, yeah, that is kind of fun. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Or it would be, because things didn't actually work out, and the couple was actually already broken up before the game released.
Yeah.
Like, by months. So that stinks.
Well, and then more news came out, and the girl, or
Oh, yeah, it's an entire story that, honestly, the internet didn't need to hear about, and I feel really bad that this Schultz guy had to try and air out all of their dirty laundry in the middle of this fun story that we were having.
Oh, it's a bummer because everyone is now, like, they're mocking this guy, and they're, you know, half the people are mocking the guy and telling everyone why he's an idiot because, oh, this is a big grand gesture, and this is really stupid, and I mean,
oh,
yeah.
I haven't seen anybody getting on him about the big grand gesture. I've seen people kind of dunking on him for doing the classic breakup thing of telling the entire internet during his 15 minutes of fame, oh yeah, man, she broke up with me, she started dating my brother, I haven't heard from them.
Yeah.
Like, painting everything this really horrible light, and it's like, dude, don't do that! This was just a fun story. You And he was even playing along with it. You know, when it first got reported, he himself said that it might go down in history as the saddest Easter egg in video games, which is also, it's still true, but I had also read that he had the idea to change the marquee to a dedication to his grandmother, who had passed recently. And Insomniac, true to being just really cool people, offered to change it for him in a future patch.
That's nice.
I don't know who within their office is that cool, but it's somebody.
I mean, I'm sure that this is an easy enough thing to change. It sounds like if it's just a marquee, that would be pretty low. It's not like they had to implement a quest line or dialogue or something like that into it, but...
Part of me kind of wishes that they had just kept it up the way it is, and then it would have just been a really good story in video game lore.
Yeah. I mean, it still is. It will be forever. It's in 10 years, it'll be, you know, did you know gaming? Did you know?
Yeah, this
Spider-Man
is going to be like
PS4 had a really sad Easter egg.
Yeah, this is going to be a really hard BuzzFeed question pretty soon.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, to me, I mean, the part of the story that got me the most is when basically the female says, I don't even play video games. Like,
that's really weird. I mean, I did not catch that part.
Yeah, it's basically what happened was this was Homer Simpson giving Marge an engraved bowling ball with Homer's name engraved in it for her birthday.
Oh, no, that's even worse.
Yeah, that's more or less kind of what it sounds like was going on with this.
It's just like a colossal blunder from every angle, isn't it?
Yeah, like the guy thought, hey, what would I want to get? Well, I would love to be proposed with in a Spider-Man game by one of my favorite developers.
I mean, on its face, it's a totally great idea if the person you're proposing to is a big video game nerd. Like,
or a big Spider-Man fan, and it sounds like she was neither.
Oh, no.
It's like if I was trying to proposed to my wife the first time and I had hid the wedding ring at like, you know, a Chinese buffet, like at the bottom of like the orange chicken, and just thinking like, certainly she will find this and be like, she's never going to go to that buffet and she's never going to eat that much orange chicken to find that one ring. Like, but I would do that. It's like, yes, but
this is starting to sound like a BoJack Horseman gag where he tries a big romantic gesture, but it's really an excuse for him to eat a bunch of, like, popcorn shrimp or something.
Oh, man, that would be great. I would love if in the new season BoJack is just like, I thought about proposing to this woman, so I talked to the developers of the new Spider-Man game on PS4. It's really good. You should try it.
Oh, no.
Ended up having to put on a marquee. Wasn't my fault that she doesn't like Spider-Man or video games. How would I know?
And this somehow leads to Todd having a great idea for a new business, which is Big Romantic Gestures Incorporated.
Yeah. And then Todd sees it. Oh, my God. BoJack, did you see this? Yes, Todd, I saw that. I was the one that asked him to put it in that game. That is so sweet. I would love that.
Thank you for listening to our BoJack Horseman fanfic.
I am very excited, though, for the next season of BoJack, because, like, this segues well. We've done it, Kyle. We've officially segued perfectly from topic, and now we're talking about Netflix, because I'm excited for the new BoJack Horseman season 5, because BoJack is probably my top 5 favorite series of all time, and not in my top 10 is the new show Enchantment or Disenchantment, Matt Groening's new show that appeared on Netflix. Not in my top 10.
I've yet to try it.
No, it's not in my top 10, but I actually really liked it. And it's a shame because I went into it hearing so much negative, feedback from people. A lot of people are really soured on this show and it had me truly baffled. Because after watching the first episodes, I had heard people saying, it's just not very good. Officially, I watched it, and it's not good. It's just a bunch of Game of Thrones jokes, and it's not very good at all, and it's just not very good. And I'm like, well, why isn't it very good? I'm like, well, it's not pushing the envelope. It's not very good. And I watched the first episode, and I was laughing the whole time. Like the nice, warm, happy laugh that I used to get when I watched The Simpsons or – you know, some episodes of Futurama, and just like, oh yeah, this is Matt Groening to a T. and like his Matt Groening produced type shows, and seeing that style from him and David X. Cohen, and like, yeah, this feels like their kind of show again. And hearing all these voice actors, and like, ah, oh, there's Tress McNeil, there's Billy West, there's Maurice LaMarche, like, ah, oh, you know, there, oh, there's
is David X. Cohen attached to this one too?
I believe so. I hope that I'm not getting that wrong, because I would feel quite the fool. But like, I like the principal cast in this show, and I like the basic premise, and the Game of Thrones references everyone's talking about, pretty much there's one that I really noticed that was obvious. Everything else either zoomed over my head or there's just not. It's fantasy tropes. It's jokes about fantasy stuff and like medieval life in general. And it's, I liked it. I mean, yeah, the main thing is that like, what if Bender was, you know, a buck-toothed princess basically. And that's kind of okay enough for me. I think the weird thing is that a lot of people seem really down on it because they're acting like it needs to be some big, shocking, world-changing show. And it's not trying to be.
Yeah, well, I don't know where anybody would get the idea that Matt Groening would be interested in pushing any envelopes, honestly.
I mean, it's hard because early seasons of The Simpsons have a lot of heart to them. And a lot of really sharp commentary. And Futurama is a show that can gut you because it just has such good episodes that are so powerfully moving with the characters they've built and the situations that, like, you've laughed so hard and now you really care about these characters, so when they hurt, you hurt too. Well, Disenchantment seems like it's just kind of being comfortable, and that's okay because not every show has to push the envelope as hard as possible. I think people are getting too used to adult animation being in the vein of Rick and Morty and BoJack Horseman and like South Park and Family Guy. And
it was really South Park that did it to us, I think. Adult animation was kind of – South Park is kind of – this is one of my patented – this is the this of this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
South Park is kind of the Dark Knight Returns of adult animated comedies, in as much as it's very, very, it's very informative on the rest of its genre from when it started up through now.
Yeah.
But it doesn't age well at all.
It has, you know, well, a lot of it was the product of the time. Like, it was stuck in time because it was trying to be so topical. And a lot of those topics didn't really hold up.
Oh, yeah, it's really weird. I tried doing, like, a not even a big epic rewatch of South Park, but I had found it on Hulu or something or other and just said, oh, okay, I'll fire up an episode from about when I stopped watching. And, man, it was topical for that specific week that it was made and released. And that week, I don't remember what was going on in the headlines of that week. It was 2010, 2011, I think, when I stopped watching.
I don't remember. I stopped watching mostly when I just stopped doing TV in general and switched to streaming services.
Yeah, because they didn't have new episodes of things up the way they do now.
Yeah. Then that's kind of what I think, like, with the way the trend South Park started, where suddenly, and we've got the big ones. I mean, the two big ones now that I say are, Rick and Morty and BoJack Horseman are like, they are, you know, gut-bustingly funny because they're so absurd and so, raw and visceral. And then they're also so emotionally powerful because, again, when you laugh that hard, you get connected with the characters. And then when they pull something on you, like a deep truth, and you're like, oh my gosh, that's right. I'm like, man, it takes a lot out of you. So with Disenchantment, again, it's this show that I like the whole season. It gets kind of, I mean, it feels slower to me, but I was intrigued enough with the story. I'm intrigued to see where they're going to go for season two, or at least part two, because this is called part one. So I'm curious, what does that mean? Like, how many parts they have planned? I haven't looked it up or anything. But it also helped that I not only follow some of the, like, film and TV critics who were really down on Disenchantment, I also follow Billy West. And so at the same time that I'm getting people like snubbing this and be like, nope, it's not good. Sorry, guys, it's terrible. I also have Billy West like, I'm really excited for everyone to watch this show. I had a lot of fun when I had all my friends on it, and we all had a lot of fun too. And I'm like, well, of course I'm going to be a little bit more positive on this. I'm hearing directly from one of the actors of the show, like an actor who I love, talk really positive, happy things about the show. And so when I went in, I was like, that was kind of my grounding point for the show was, hey, this is going to be a lot of these actors that I like getting to hang out together with some new actors that I've yet to hear, and just loving some of them. Like, wow, I really like this actor now, and I want to hear him in more stuff. No, I really like the main character. I hope that the actress who plays Bean gets in more stuff than I hear. It's like, this is fun.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at it. It's been sitting. I'm so backed up on television because I'm finished up with Succession, and I'm going to write that up this week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing season 2 of The Good Place since that dropped on Netflix.
Waiting to watch that.
At some point I've got to go through Castle Rock because I'm a big Stephen King fan and I'm hearing good things.
I just heard bad things about the finale though.
Oh no.
I heard like one person that I think we might mutually follow, but she just mentioned that the finale dropped the whole series to a 5 out of 10 for her.
Oh no. Well, so,
we'll see. We'll see. I'm not going to say anything other than that. Just
I'm rooting for that show because a guy that I follow everywhere and listen to his podcast and whatnot, he's a writer on that show. So I'm going in pretty positive because, you know, I'm the target audience for that show.
Yeah.
But then I've also got, oh boy, still finishing up season 1 of The Expanse in my spare time, which is also my washing the dishes time.
Mm-hmm.
And then what else have I been messing around with? I don't know. Every once in a while my kids decide, oh, we're going to start this show. Like my son randomly decided, I want to watch Lost in Space on Netflix. I'd already seen it. I wrote up every episode and I said, all right, totally. Let's watch that. And didn't get very far because that show moves at a much too slow a pace for a little boy.
Yeah. I started watching the new season of Orange is the New Black and then was just like, it was good, but also I realized, oh boy, this is going to be a little heavier than I want right now.
Oh yeah, yeah. I finished up that season in my spare time and yeah, it's a rough one. It's really, really... things are so much heavier in that show than they were when it started.
Yeah, and that's, again, the equilibrium. Like, I'm feeling it hard. Like, I know that the top fell over, and we are not even looking at a top anymore. We're looking at something analogous to a top in this thing. Something similar but different that everyone's like, all right, we're watching this now. How did we get over here?
But that's the thing that Jenji Cohen does. Did you ever watch Weeds?
I did not.
I've been writing about Glow and I've been watching Orange is the New Black and Jenji Cohen is the link between Weeds and Orange is the New Black. I've been talking about Weeds nonstop for like the last couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
Because Weeds is that kind of show where it teeters around with that equilibrium that we keep mentioning. And then at one point it just toppled over and said, you know what? We're kind of a different show now. We're just going to go in this direction. Mm-hmm. And it was a really weird direction, and it never really pulled out of it. Because the whole premise of Weeds that was brilliant was this is a very affluent, very very upper middle class, white, suburban, gated community. And this lady sells weed within the gated community. Okay, yeah. That's a show. Then once they got out of the gated community and like literally burned it to the ground, and then it just became a show where the characters that we kind of sort of like are traipsing about doing whatever. Like it wasn't even a show about, like, I hate to complain that this show about selling drugs isn't about selling drugs anymore. Because that's exactly why everybody watched Breaking Bad, right? We were just so interested in that crystal, man. But, you know, I mean, Breaking Bad even became a show that stopped being about the drug premise and started being about the characters, but Weeds was a comedy, so it didn't have much in the way of plot going for it.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's my rant about Weeds. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Anyways, one other thing I'm watching on Netflix. I got Rosalie to finally go through Defenders with me.
I got halfway through the first season of Luke Cage, and I'm going through everything chronologically. So it's to the point where I'm so far behind in the Marvel Netflix stuff that I'm kind of done watching it.
Yeah.
I'm like just getting crushed, and it's a bummer because I know I would like Punisher, and I know I'd like Defenders, and I know I would really like Jessica Jones season 2, but I'm just so far behind and realize I have to go through the second half of Luke Cage season 1 and the first season of Iron Fist and then the Defenders, and then I watch.
I would actually say that you could probably skip straight to Defenders from where you're at right now.
But I'm a completionist with shows. I get too caught up with that. So especially with this one that they've been trying to build this universe, like I want to see what they're doing as they're doing it. Like
okay,
I don't
that's
like
fair enough,
yeah, but I don't want to skip steps. I mean, yeah, I could probably do it and probably find just as much enjoyment. But then I'm like, well, if I'm going to skip around, why don't I just watch a different show? I have enough shows I could watch.
That's true. That's totally true.
Yeah, and of course, because I'm all about consuming media, it's time to go to the Switch Corner. Talk about Switch, which is exciting because this is also the day before a Nintendo Direct that got rescheduled, in fact, because last week it was supposed to go up on Thursday, and it didn't because of the earthquake in Hokkaido.
Yeah.
Which, you know, kudos to Nintendo, actually, for that was a really respectful thing they did, where they like, hey, we were going to have this, but the Hokkaido earthquake was pretty big, and we want to respect that disaster and the tragedy, and so we're going to shift it by a week. And the usual people lost their minds, but it's like, dudes.
Yeah, it was totally a classy move on Nintendo's part. Obviously, it was, you know, that's the only move you make in that situation is, hey, look, this can wait.
Yeah, this is exciting.
All you nerds can wait.
Yeah, this is exciting, but also you're going to get your video games. And not to downplay the fact that some people, that really is their thing they were waiting for. I mean, I understand that. I have weeks where, like, I have one thing I in need to get through the week. And to some people, that would be the Nintendo Direct. People were hinging their weeks on, like, they needed that to get through some tough times. But this week, they get to do it this week instead. And, of course, I have my predictions of what I think is going to pop up in this Direct. There's been a few things semi-leaked and a few things announced that seemed like they were supposed to be part of the Direct, but basically the companies are like, well, screw it, we're going to talk about it anyway. Like, I'm stoked that Square Enix announced this week that they are doing a remastered edition of Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles on both PS4 and Switch. And I could not be happier about that because Crystal Chronicles is one of those amazing gems on the GameCube, my favorite system ever, that when I first played it, I didn't quite get what they were trying to do. And in replaying it later in life, it is such a beautiful, amazing game that never saw its full potential because to get the full potential of the four people playing, you had to have the GameCube. And yeah. Every player had to have the Game Boy Advance. And every person playing also had to have a Game Link cable between the Game Boy Advance and the GameCube. And you had to have enough time to play this, and you had to have the game, and you had to have a memory card, and it was like all these things together were like, oh my gosh, that is not reasonable anymore.
At the time, like, it certainly wasn't.
Yeah, and now that we have the Switch, and a lot of people have the Switch, and it's pretty easy to take that around.
And you don't have to be in the same room or even on the same continent anymore.
Yeah, and I don't know if they've announced whether it's going to be just local only multiplayer, if they're going to have online multiplayer. I really hope there's online multiplayer. I think that would be phenomenal.
It'd be ridiculous to not have it, but then again, that does kind of sound like a Nintendo decision.
Well, yes, but again, this is going on PS4 and Switch, so it's not...
Oh, right.
So this is not a Nintendo decision. This is Square Enix entirely. Square Enix makes weird decisions, but I think that either, you know, if they don't have it, I'm sure there's a good reason for it. Possibly because it is more of a niche title. I'm just excited because it's a darn good game, and the more people.
I remember when you first played it, you were very excited about it.
It was the return of Final Fantasy to a Nintendo console. They had skipped the entire N64 generation, which was a big hit for Nintendo fans, because we got Final Fantasy VI, and that's where we left off, and then we were stoked because VII was coming to the N64, and then things turned sour when Squaresoft at the time was like, why did you stick with cartridges? And they're like, because, like, these are too expensive and don't have very good memory storage. So we're going to go talk to Sony here and make Final Fantasy VII for their system instead, because we can make a much bigger game with better graphics and it's more cost effective for us. And they made Final Fantasy VII, and the rest of that is history. And then it's like, whoa. So now Final Fantasy is a Sony franchise, basically. It jumped completely from Nintendo to Sony, and that was a huge loss. And so we went through Final Fantasy VII, VIII, and IX, and I think by that point, 10 and possibly 11 online had come out. We got Crystal Chronicles on the GameCube, and it was like, oh, a Nintendo exclusive Final Fantasy, return to form, and I was so excited because Nintendo Power hyped me out of my mind for it.
That was kind of a GameCube thing, wasn't it? To just suddenly acquire a one-off title from a traditionally exclusive to another company franchise. Like, I mean, there was a Metal Gear Solid game that it was a port, but it was on the GameCube, right?
It was Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes, and that was a remake of the original Metal Gear Solid on the GameCube.
A solid one, from what I heard.
That was actually the way I played Metal Gear Solid, the first Metal Gear Solid. I have it.
That was just the GameCube thing, was getting nice ports or nice exclusive titles.
Yeah, they definitely, it became a place for things to live that were unexpected things. Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, I think when Sonic, like, both Sonic and Adventure 1 and 2 had ports, like remastered at the time. Updated, up-resed ports from the Dreamcast. Phantasy Star Online jumped over to GameCube, and that was like, it was interesting how many things were being salvaged, like, from the wreckage of the Dreamcast. And that wreckage went over to Xbox as well, here and there, with, like, Jet Set Radio and Panzer Dragoon, that stuff. But with Crystal Chronicles, it was this just amazing, like, that game has one of the most beautiful soundtracks you'll ever hear. Very unexpected. The game itself just plays really nice. It has its flaws, and I'm curious to see what they've streamlined in the update, and I'm certain that we'll see more in the direct tomorrow. There was another thing that kind of leaked, was the name of the Yoshi game that we've already seen for the last 2 years, and it sounds like it's going to be Yoshi's Crafty World, which to me is like, I don't really care. Titles don't really mean much to me about a game. Like, I want to know if the game, I already knew the game's out. All right, I don't know the game exists. They've shown the game. I think it looks kind of boring.
Well, regarding the title, does it have, like, some kind of building element, or is it something with an aesthetic thing like Kirby's Epic Yarn?
Yeah, it's an aesthetic thing. And it's clearly the sequel to Yoshi's Woolly World, which I have fond connection to. And it looks like the next evolution of Yoshi's Woolly World, which Yoshi's Woolly World was such a good game. And, you know, one of my favorite games to work on because it's so beautiful and so heartwarming. And anyone who, like, all the reviewers like, well, it's okay, but it doesn't push the genre. It's like, dude, stop. Play this game and just enjoy how sweet and wonderful it is. It's not trying to be anything it's not. It's just being Yoshi. Isn't that enough for some people sometimes?
I agree, and I also really enjoy Chris's new character, which is Video Game Seuss.
Dudes.
Come on, dude.
Not to say that if you didn't like it, that's fine. I mean, if you didn't like it, then you didn't like it. If it didn't catch you, didn't catch you. I find that game a game that was much needed in the grimdark times that we've been going through. And I'm sure Yoshi's Crafty World will be just as uplifting. It, to me, the gameplay looks... slower and a little more boring, mostly because it looks like they're going to like a, like 2.5D plane. It looks like there's a lot of like 3D movement, and it just, all the trailers I've seen make me think, it's not doing it for me.
2.5D works, especially with Nintendo characters. It works.
I mean, it works, but it also just looks a little too slow for me. Like, I don't know, once you start to get into the realm of like, this could have been 3D, I don't know, it could have, I don't know. And I'm just saying, like, something about it hasn't caught me, but I've heard that has been a title that's leaked. Because of the way things go, there will absolutely be a Smash character revealed tomorrow. I've had my predictions. My big predictions for the Direct is that we're gonna get a Golden Sun remastered edition announcement, or like a Golden Sun remake on Switch for the first Golden Sun and Golden Sun Lost Age. Like, they're gonna mash those together into one definitive, like, Golden Sun Switch. And because of that, they're also going to announce Isaac for Smash. That's my prediction. There's been some hints that that's what's going to happen. We haven't seen Isaac's assist trophy from Brawl return in Smash 4, and we haven't seen anything confirmed or deconfirmed in Smash 5, Smash Brothers Ultimate. So, and then there was Sakurai, being the master troll that he is, tweeted a picture that people very quickly noticed. It was like Link and a couple other characters positioned against the Rathalos, which is the dragon type enemy, but the positioning of the camera matched identically to the positioning that, like, the perspective where you're in the battle in Golden Sun, like the battle, like boss battle screens. It was like, that's interesting that this image, like, nothing that Sakurai does is accidental. That seemed almost like a very heavy, like, wink, wink. And the fourth character, because there's four characters in your party in that game, the fourth character was obscured. You couldn't see who the fourth person was in the line, but it was clear that there was supposed to be a fourth person.
I'm not sure who's more pathological here, the guy who might be dropping those hints on y'all, or y'all Nintendo fans who have dug this deep to figure this out.
And to the credit, I didn't have to dig it all, because people already dug it and pointed it out, and I was like, you know, you're sitting there, you know, Charlie Day style with the looking at the conspiracy theory behind you, but I'm like, you know, you made a very good convincing argument there. This does sound like Isaac is definitely, it seems very strongly confirmed. And there's been theories as well. My other prediction for Smash Bros. Characters, I think Geno from Super Mario RPG will finally be coming into this game, because there has been a trend of some of the more popular Mii fighter costumes from Smash Bros. 4 have been coming over as full characters, which includes, I believe there was a Ridley helmet, or Ridley hat, was one. The big one was Krom. They had a full Krom costume, and he's got a full character now. King K. Rool, it was announced as a new character.
That's pretty logical. That makes sense.
And so, like, they've shown, like, some other ones, like, some other characters that have yet to come over. Isabelle, a lot of people are assuming she's going to be an Echo Fighter off of Villager, and I'm like, yeah, I think that's pretty solid. A lot of people are assuming that Shadow is going to be an Echo Fighter of Sonic, and I'm like, that seems almost like they should. If it doesn't happen, I'll be more surprised than if it does, because that just seems like way too obvious. I have some Echo Fighters I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for Wart from Super Mario Bros. 2 USA to show up as an Echo Fighter of Bowser.
That'd be pretty cool.
And I wouldn't mind if we at least get a Miss Pac-Man costume swap for Pac-Man. Like, that seems like that was a pretty big misstep initially.
Yeah, that seems like a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, that one's easy to pull in there. Other than that, like, I can't really think of any more Echo Fighters that they could easily make without having to get really creative. Then again, he is really creative, so who knows? Who really knows? A lot of people are saying that the Octolings are going to show up as an echo of the Inklings. I don't know. I don't think he's gonna pack it too much. That seems like a bit of overkill. I mean, he's already giving eight variations, like complete, like, costume variations for the Inkling. So, I mean, having another eight complete variations of the costume for the Octolings would be kind of out there. But, like, my big, the one I keep saying, like, the big character I think we're gonna get And it's like so out there that I know this is outlandish. It's like, it's not Banjo-Kazooie. It's not Shantae. It's not Goku. It's Scrooge McDuck from the NES DuckTales game. I'm still saying.
I would be totally down for that. That would be an awesome character.
There is an off chance somewhere, somehow, that we're going to get Scrooge McDuck because he was well-loved on the NES for the two DuckTales games on the NES, and he was well-loved in the DuckTales Remastered, and the new DuckTales game is doing, or the new DuckTales show is quite good and is well-received, and I feel like now is the time for Disney and Nintendo to start burying the hatchet and just start, just kiss already, just a little, just to peck on the cheek at least.
And I don't know. I'm leery about Disney getting that close to another big corporation.
I just want, it needs to happen at this point. Like, Nintendo and Disney need to just become one and the same, because they're basically the same company, but just different mediums. And Disney needs to figure out how to get into gaming the correct way. And I want to see.
If it's not Disney and Nintendo, then it's going to end up being Disney and EA. So yeah, I'd rather it be Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. I think that Scrooge McDuck is a perfect addition to the game. He fits the weirdness of the roster. He's got his pogo stick cane. He's got the cane whack, which would be great. You can call in other, you know, characters to assist with. He can throw gems at people. Like, it'd be great.
A great final smash would be he just, like, causes an avalanche of coins to bury you.
Exactly. It could be great. Or Launchpad would, like, fly in and, like, crash into him.
Oh, yeah, that works.
Like, there's so much they could do. That's still my, like, out there. Because so far the characters we've got have been exciting, but not unexpected. Simon Belmont was about as expected as could possibly be. Like, he was...
Not unwelcome.
No, not unwelcome. I mean, very welcome. He looks like a really fun character, and Richter seems like a really fun Echo Fighter variation. The trailer was awesome for it, if not, like, the obvious. As soon as you see the cast level, we're like, Simon Belmont, this is what we do, Simon Belmont. There comes Simon Belmont. We kind of knew that was going to happen. And, like, they've been doing a good job with, like, so far, the four completely new characters they've announced with the Inklings was like, yes, we knew Inklings was going to, for obvious, that they had to show up. Ridley was pretty exciting because people have been demanding Ridley since I'm pretty sure Melee, and Sakurai kept saying, there's no way I can bring Ridley into this game. He's too big. It wouldn't work. And he finally was like, fine, I can do it, I guess. And then getting Simon Belmont was like, yeah, he was the last holdout because we already had Mega Man. We had Pac-Man. We had Snake. We had Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, we already had all these extra characters from, like, older franchises. And Simon Belmont was, like, the last one. Like, this is Simon Belmont has to come over to this game. But when we also got King K. Rool, that was pretty exciting, too, because everyone assumed that, well, Nintendo has shied away from taking anything still from the Donkey Kong Country franchise. Like, and because the, like, Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze had new enemies. It wasn't King K. Rool and the Kremlings back. After DK Country 3, they just kind of let the Kremlings go away. Or DK 64, they're like, yeah, the Kremlings are done. We're not talking with them anymore. And, like, K. Rool showed up, I think, in Mario Baseball game on the Wii, but then that was, like, the last we heard of him.
Oh, wow. And, he's never even showed up in like, a Mario Kart or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely not. He has not. They've kept Donkey Kong and Diddy Kong strong. Funky Kong keeps popping up in things, and Cranky Kong has kind of become, like, in the Donkey Kong franchise at least, Cranky Kong is well-loved, and Dixie as well. But a lot of the other ancillary Kongs and characters are just kind of, like, thrown by the wayside. And so to see K. Rool represented again, and represented so faithfully to the original Super Nintendo iterations of him, it's just so cool to see that he looks just exactly like you want him to look, and he acts just exactly how you want him to act, and the trailer reveal for him was so darn good that even though it was, again, like, as soon as you see, you know, Donkey and Diddy are sitting there in their treehouse, and whoomph, they feel, the thud, like, well, K. Rool's in the game. And then, like, this great Sakurai trailer. I don't know, have you seen the trailer?
I don't think I've seen the whole thing. I've only seen snippets.
It's hilarious because you get the stomping and, like, DK and Diddy look out the window, and it's the silhouette of K. Rool, and then it's King Dedede pulls the costume off, and he's laughing at him, and like, this epic troll, like, I trolled you, you thought K. Rool was in the game, which is doubly funny because the person who voices Dedede in all the games is Sakurai himself. That's like the ultimate trolling, and then K. Rool walks up behind Dedede and smacks him out of the way. He's like, no, I'm really in the game after all. And it's like, that's such a fantastic moment because it's so silly and it fits Sakurai so well as a guy who, I mean, he really does embody a lot of the best parts that Iwata brought to gaming in that, like, this was a person, like, Iwata was a guy who understood the business side and the technical side, but also was, like, deep down, like, really a gamer. And Sakurai is that too. Like, he is going so in depth with these little touches to this game. I mean, there are over 70 characters in this game, and each of them has all this uniqueness to them that's just like, wow, you went above and beyond. Every single character has references to their franchise in abundance, in character animations and character costumes and stages and like musical choices and little tweaks and quirks and things. It's just like, it's baffling how anyone could ever look at the Smash Brothers games and not immediately just go, wow, Sakurai may just be one of the greatest game developers ever for the sheer fact that he has thrown in so many details that will take you days to talk about because there's just too many of them. I mean, yeah. Multiple YouTube channels have started and survived because Smash Brothers got them their start. And I'm happy to see that they got to points past Smash Brothers where they were self-sustaining. But they still, like, acknowledge, like, yeah, totally, Smash Brothers was the thing that brought me to YouTube and gave me a career here. It's like, that's kind of astonishing.
Yeah. No, like, it's...
Yeah. There's not a lot of other games that have done that, other than maybe, I would say, Minecraft has done that.
Sure.
Fortnite has done that. Sure, Fortnite's done that. There's another thing that people are expecting. There's going to be some talk about Fortnite in the direct tomorrow.
I mean, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I also think, like, we're finally going to hear about the new... a new Animal Crossing game. I say the new one. I'm not, you know, knowing nothing other than just, like, the timing would be like, yeah, it's about time we're going to get a new Animal Crossing. Like, the Switch is a success. The best Animal Crossing sales-wise was Animal Crossing New Leaf on the 3DS, partly because it was well-received gameplay-wise, and it was portable, and now the Switch is portable, and it's very clearly, like, the portable system. Like, they're leaning into the portability of it. And they have to, because that really does make, that's why it's so good, is the system being portable has made it good.
I've seen a whole lot of them out in the wild, but then again, I'm usually on public transit when I'm out in the wild, and it doesn't really lend well to that.
I've seen a few in public transit, not often, and it's a pretty ballsy move, I think, because these are a $300 system, and I don't trust taking that openly on the max line. And
I'm kind of sad that they're finally seem to be abandoning the 3DS set. I mean,
well, they said there's announcements for 3DS games tomorrow too. I mean, they are supporting it through the end of next year, which is just weird. It's just weird because the 3DS life has been very long, even in terms of their handhelds. It's been pretty long, and
I guess how long it's been. I was listening to a podcast today, and somebody offhandedly was mentioning the original DS, and he had to explain what the what was the cartridge that was that you had to get from overseas that had a memory card in it.
R4 chip.
Yeah, he had to explain what an R4 was for a few minutes, and everyone was like, wait, so this is legit? No, it's not legit. But you would download games and put them on this thing and then put it in the 3DS so that you had a bunch of games.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I feel like if they had created something like that that was actually licensed with the ability to do something like that, that would have been the next step for 3DSs for me. I mean, I know that you can direct download now, of course, but I don't know. It's just not as portable as it should be for me.
The 3DS?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I'm just interested in how many iterations of the 3DS we've got compared to previous. Because there was the original Game Boy had the Game Boy and then the Game Boy Pocket.
And then the Game Boy Color.
And then the Game Boy Color was the next generation of it. And the Game Boy Color was pretty solid. And then there was the Game Boy Advance, which then became the Game Boy Advance SP. So there's two iterations of that. And then there was also the Game Boy Micro. So there were actually three iterations of the Game Boy Advance.
I forgot about the Micro.
A lot of people forget about the Micro, which is actually it was a really good system. It just was also totally impractical, but it's a great collector's piece and they're pretty good little handhelds, honestly. Like the screen resolution is weirdly really good still. Like it shouldn't be, but it is.
Didn't you know somebody in high school had one of those?
I'm sure we knew someone. I mean, if you had one in high school, you were that guy, honestly. Like, now they make a little more sense to see in our, crowd of people because they're a cool collector piece and they are fun to have. I mean, I have a few friends on Twitter who have micros. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Like, and I wish I had one, but in high school, when we were in high school, like, with our friends, I could probably guess, like, Jared maybe would have had one.
Yeah, I think it might have been him. He, I'm sure he got made fun of mercilessly for it. And
he should have at the time. I mean, he would have been the guy.
But he's laughing his way to the bank with it now as a collector's piece, probably. So, good on him.
Let's see. The DS had the DS Fat, the original. Then the DS Lite, which just sold buku bucks. Then there was the DSi, which removed the Game Boy Advance backwards compatibility, but added download compatibility, which was
big. And a camera and all sorts of stuff.
And then the DSi XL, which I got from my mom, and she actually used that a lot. I got her after the fact, like way after the fact, but she really liked that. I had a ton of fun with like Sudoku and some of the Brain Age game stuff. But then the 3DS has had the 3DS, 3DS XL, 2DS. New Nintendo 3DS, New Nintendo 3DS XL, and now the New Nintendo 2DS XL, which is like six iterations of one handheld. And oh my gosh, that's astonishing how much they have squeezed out of the 3DS, which again, the 3DS is probably, if you have to pick any system of any time ever, if you have a 3DS, new Nintendo 3DS, you have the system with the greatest library of games to date.
There are some fantastic ones.
The 3DS has an amazing library. The 3DS can play all DS games, which also is a phenomenal library. Plus, you have the Virtual Console, which has a lot of the heavy hitters on the NES. So you can get Mario Brothers, Mario 2, Super Mario 3. You can get all the old Mega Man games are all on that. Like Mega Man 1 through, I think 1 through 10 at this point.
All the original Zeldas.
All the original Zeldas. You can get, it says the new Nintendo 3DS. You can do the Super Nintendo Virtual Console, so you can get Super Metroid and Link to the Past and Earthbound and stuff like that on it. So like, if you play your cards right, if you only have the money to get one system, you get the 3DS, like a new Nintendo 3DS, and just ride that forever, because that's the greatest library ever. It's just it's astonishingly good. And a lot of the good stuff on the Wii U showed up on the 3DS as well, eventually, like stuff got ported over, and they're still weirdly doing it. They just ported Captain Crowed Treasure Tracker to the Switch, but also to the 3DS for some reason. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what got me into the new 3DS XL was the ability to play Smash with anybody who had it on the console at the time.
Yeah.
That would have been lovely. I would have loved to be able to play with my new 3DS as a as a controller on any Wii U game, that would have been great.
Yeah.
That would have been a lot of work, though, for probably not much return.
No, but it was weird that they had the connectability to Smash 4 from the... Like, I don't know anyone who wanted to use a 3DS as a controller for Smash 4 on the Wii U, but they gave that option because Sakurai, again, he gives options, and I'm curious what's going to happen with Smash Ultimate. Like, clearly they have already announced, like, yep, you can use the GameCube controllers again on this. And obviously you can use the Joy-Cons and the Pro Controllers, and it's like, what else can you use on this thing? Tell me all about it.
Yeah.
It's
kind of fun how much variety there was baked in.
Yeah. This, I've been playing my Switch, I've been playing Octopath Traveler, which has been one of the big darn games of the now.
That one exploded.
It did, which is really happy to see, because it's one of those indicators that it's yet again another genre that everyone, you know, on the industry side is like, oh, well, it's a dead genre. No one's playing JRPGs anymore. Like, no one's playing old school style JRPGs. They're just not playing it. They're not selling. No one's going to buy them. And all of a sudden, here's Square Enix going, hi, everybody. We are the masters of the old school JRPG, or at least we used to be. And guess what? It looks like we still are. And everyone's like, oh, there's no life in this genre. And they're like, here it is. And it sells over 1 million copies within the first month. And it was hard to get because every place was sold out. And it was like, oh, okay, this game is pretty darn good. Like, I was sold the demo. When the game came out, it had a demo, like, months before this, which was a 3-hour trial. It was basically to play the game as you want, like, as much as you can within 3 hours. And I got the demo and said, okay, I'm going to download the demo because I want to prove to myself that I don't want to play this game. And I played the first hour. I played the first hour of the demo, and I said, okay, you know, it's all right. It's got a cool thing. I guess I'll be fine. I play the second hour of the game, the demo, and I say, All right. I gotta see what happens next. Let's see what more I can do. Maybe I can get a third party member by this time. Play the third hour of the game, and by the end of the 3 hours, I'm like, dang it. I gotta buy this game. And immediately, like, told
my buddy. That's the mark of a really good demo right there.
I mean, it's a mark of a good game. The game got its hooks in me, and the demo basically was like, hey, here comes gaming Seuss. Hey, dudes, you wanna play this game? It's pretty good. Dudes, it's a great game. Why don't you just play it for 3 hours? Yeah, all right, Seuss, that seems good. Dudes, you're going to buy this game.
By the way, if you've never seen Gravity Falls, you have no clue where this character is coming from.
I'm actually really considering going as Seuss for Halloween this year.
That'd be a very comfy costume.
It would be. But yeah, Octopath Traveler is, it is kind of weird, like so the whole point is that you play as, you can collect 8 different party members who all have their own story. And you get to select the first one as your main person, and that's the first story that you start with. So I started with, Ulbrich, who is he's the oldest character, he's a knight, and a warrior, and he's, you know, very strong and sturdy and all about physical actions. Like, that, all of his attacks are about physical strength and stuff like that. No magic-based stuff whatsoever. Standard, I guess it would be paladin character type thing. Anyway, he's the soldier who, his story is like, he used to be, like, a retainer to a king, and then the king was killed and betrayed by someone close to him, and so you are, you know, it's years later and you're in a peaceful village, but then suddenly you hear a tale of this character, like the guy who disgraced you all and killed the king. Like, you're going after him. You finally, the trail just heated up and you found that you can find this guy again. And his story's like, okay, that's pretty good. And then I get another character. The next one I got is, Therion, who is the thief character, who his story is he wants to go thieving, and he's in this town, and there's this mansion, and there's like all these rumors. Everyone's like, oh, this mansion is unthievable. And he's like, well, I'll show you. And he, you know, busts in and thieves the thieving, and it was a trick the whole time. And it's like the maiden of the mansion, like, shackles this thing to him and is like, that's like the brand of, like, basically the dumb thief that got caught. And she's like, I can take that shackle off of you if you thief the things that I need to be thieved for me. And it's like, what? Like, well, these three things that got thieved from us, you gotta go thieving back. There's a lot of thieving in his story, if you haven't picked up. You still there?
Sorry, you there?
Yeah. Where did you go? I was talking about thieving. Did you catch all the
thieving? Yeah, I had the perfect rejoinder too, but you didn't hear it. I said, yeah, he's a bit of a thief, I gather.
Yes. So you have that, and then like, later on, like, who else? So Hanawit she's a huntress who her master, hunter, like her mentor, he went off on his own and she hasn't seen him in so long and his wolf companion returned without him. So she's on the hunt to try to find him again. So I have Ophelia she's the white mage character who she's from the church and she's got to go on a pilgrimage to light the sacred flame in all these different churches. She's like her quest seems like the classic Final Fantasy quest. Like go to the place, do the thing, go. Also she's key because she's the healer and you need a good healer in your party.
But then I got to
the story for Primrose and her story begins with her as a child. She sees her father murdered by three men with crow tattoos on their arms, and she wants to find them again. And it leads her to this town later on in life where she's basically a prostitute and a dancer. And this awful, like, man owns her and abuses her. And she eventually chases after one of the three men who killed her father, but has to kill her like slave owner master first in this. And it's like all so uncomfortable.
You're like, okay. The tattoos. That sounds a whole lot like one of my favorite spaghetti westerns, which is called Death Rides a Horse.
Yeah. And her story is like, woof, her story is heavy. But then you got Cyrus, and his story is he's a scholar and he went to the library, but there's a book missing. And he found that some people have stolen some books from this library, so he's going to track them down. I'm like, these stories are not equal.
Yeah, the stakes are not even on these.
I can just imagine, like, the eight travelers, like, Primrose, why are you on these travels? My father was killed as a child, and I had to work as a prostitute, basically, and a stripper to make my way here so I can get my revenge. Cyrus, why are you on this journey? Why, I just like books. Okay.
There's a book missing from the library.
Bully on you all, there's a book missing, and I will not abide such a travesty of the library system. It only works if we all pitch in and remember that we're just borrowing, not keeping.
I mean, he's right.
He truly is. And so it's just kind of funny, like, that there's that weird disjointed, like, you know, those stories are like, all right. I'm fine with it, though. Like, it still works. The characters, the voice acting, I think, has been great. Because there's a lot of voice acting, surprisingly, in the game. That's been really spot on, really good. Writing has been really solid. The art is beautiful. It's that, like, it's pixel art, but they have a lot of heavy effects on it. So, like, seeing lighting effects on pixel art is amazing. It's a gorgeous game. It sounds great. I like the way that it works where every enemy has a certain thing it's weak to. And if you hit them with that weakness, then they break. And, like, the point is, the goal is to break the enemy because then they lose the next turn. And right. They also take extra damage when they're broke. And usually, like, the characters have between, like, 1 to 10 break turns, basically. So you have to hit them, like, 10 times with the thing they're weak to break them. Bosses are the ones that are higher. And, like, normal enemies you fight have been, like, between 1 and 3 to 4 for me. But it's a simple system, and it's kind of cool because every turn your characters get a boost point. So they can boost up to 4 times, which will make their special attack stronger, or they get to basically attack 4 times in a row, just bam, 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 bam. And it's like, it's really satisfying to take, you know, Ulbrich, who's all beefy with his sword, And it's like, okay, here's an enemy who has a 4-time break, and he's weak to swords, so Ulbricht, go break the guy. I will break him now. And just whack, 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 shatter. It's like, yes! Satisfying.
Sounds like the perfect game for you, honestly.
It's been nice. I mean, I'm only maybe 17, 18 hours into it after having it for 2 months or so, but that's because I can pick it up, play it whenever I feel like it. The story is not heavy enough and confusing enough that I would be lost. It's broken into convenient chapters per character. So it's like, oh, right now I'm on Therion's second chapter. Like, I went and got all 8 of the characters into their chapter 1. Now I'm starting to go to their chapter 2. And it's just kind of nice. It's simple, and I'm totally down with some simplicity sometimes.
Oh, yeah, it can be comforting.
Yeah. Speaking of that, is everyone comforted that we're back? That we came back, we did another one of these?
I know I am.
I am, too.
This is great. This is so much fun.
Yes, and let us all pray that Skype really recorded this correctly, because we're flying by the seat of our pants, guys.
Yeah, and this was a long recording for free software to pull off, so I really hope that it did. If it didn't, this is one of the greatest episodes lost to the ages.
Exactly.
And we can confidently say that without anybody having to actually back it up by listening.
Yeah. Otherwise, I hope everyone listened to the first episode of Drat.
Oh, yeah. Drat is our side podcast that is now available via the same blog page and all over your different podcatchers, just like this show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and any third-party podcatcher.
Yeah. And it's, Drat stands for Dad's Review a Thing.
And we did. That's exactly what happens. We are dads, and we review a thing.
We did. Unavowed was the first one. I beat that a couple of days or about a week ago. By the way.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy.
It pays off, huh?
It has a lot of moments in it that really do pay off, and there is a massive twist midway through the game that I was just like, Oh boy, I'm gonna have to deal with that one for a while.
That's exactly the kind of stuff that I dig.
Yeah, and so I can't spoil it for you, but I want to have you play it someday soon. It took me about 12 hours altogether going through the game.
Okay. And
so I highly recommend that. So confirm if you listened to that first episode of Drat and you're like, "Well, I wonder what he thought about it." I'm like, "Yeah, I finished it, and I was like, that was very good." Otherwise, we have another episode of Drat, hopefully soon. I have another review copy from another game. I believe Lamplight City is the name of the game. Another point and click adventure with some weirds. I think they consider it a steampunk noir. So we'll see.
That's great.
Yeah, it looks really good. Another pixel art type thing. Like, so I'm really psyched for that. So we'll have episode there.
Yeah, that's something to look forward to, and there's also all sorts of written content all over the Media Sandwich blog spot. Chiefly, I'm coming back with Crossing the Stream, my television review / weight loss diary. I've taken some time off from it, and I've decided to come back with a little bit of a lighter schedule, because every weekday was starting to kill me, so then I dropped down to every other weekday, and now I'm like, maybe once a week just as a check-in. Because I'm at a point now where I can exercise without making it a writing assignment, and a writing assignment's what's hard.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have a companion to this called Writing Through the Backlog, where I will be playing a game, basically, while I'm on the exercise bike. And so far, I've been playing Super Mario RPG. I have 12 sessions of it written out. I think there's probably about 3 more sessions of the game left, all things told. But I've been kind of taking my sweet time on it. And that will probably all, like, that'll get released all in a batch. I mean, like, probably one right after the other, bap, 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 for like 2-3 weeks in a row. Probably 5 a week. That makes sense. Once a day per weekday.
Sounds great.
I do that, yeah. Otherwise, my big exciting news is that I will be at Portland Retro Gaming Expo again. Usually I'm attending this time. I have a panel this year.
Awesome.
Exciting. Yeah, I get to do a panel on localization. So
That's great.
Yeah, it'll be me and Rue, our buddy from Clan of the Grey Wolf, and Norm, the game gaming historian. So.
Wow, that's going to be a sight to behold. And if anybody happens to be close enough or can get close enough to Portland, come out and check it out. When is the expo?
I believe it is October 19th through 21st, or if I'm remembering that incorrectly, it's the 20th or 22nd. It's there. Check out, I think it's retrogamingexpo.com.
That's right. This is why I always miss retro gaming expos, because it's always either on my anniversary weekend or on my wife's birthday. This time it happens to land right smack on my wife's birthday.
Yep. It's,
so come out and show your support for Chris and his panel, and do it for me because I won't be there. Sorry, man.
It is a good, it's a good expo to go to. Lots of great people are always there. I'm always happy to see Norm and Rue every year. I'm happy to see Gerard, the completionist, show up. We're buddies, so we see each other. A couple other people from Normal Boots, like Peanut Butter Gamer, Pro Jared, Space Hamster, they all show up. I've met them. They don't remember me as much. Pro Jared might remember me a little bit, but he's a harder nut to crack for sure.
Oh, it always sounds like such a blast when you come back from it. So one of these days I'm going to have to get out there, but you know, I'm such a filthy casual that I'm not even sure if I can contribute to the conversation.
Who else is coming this year? Stop Skeletons from Fighting. So that's Derek Alexander and Grace Kramer. Derek Alexander, former Happy Video Game Nerd, which we did a podcast with him way back in the day.
Yeah.
He'll be there, friends of mine as well. And Pat, the NES Punk, and Ian, Pat and Ian from the Completely Unnecessary Podcast. They're always good, fun to see. Especially, like, Ian's great to see because Ian right now owes me a copy of No Man's Sky. Because he had a little contest on Twitter, and I won his copy, but he's yet to send it to me, and I think he keeps forgetting. Like, every so often I poke him, like, hey, how's it going? Is that No Man's Sky? And he's like, oh, I forgot. So I think at this point I'm just going to wait until Portland Retro and hopefully get it from him there.
That's fun stuff.
Yeah. That's where you can expect stuff from us soon, content-wise. Otherwise, you can find me on Twitter at @thechrispranger.
And I'm at Kyle Martinak. And anything coming out of the blog or the podcasts, either of the podcasts, you can find that at @media_sandwich on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Or you can find it all at media-sandwich.blogspot.com. And, of course, rate and review the show on iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher, or wherever it is you listen to it.
Like, comment, and subscribe.
Oh, yeah, like, comment, subscribe. Do all of that stuff. Press all those buttons. Whatever button you have.
Smash that like button, as they say.
Yeah, seriously, give us that old thumbs up. Or is it a thumbs up now? I don't know.
Well, it all depends on what platform we're on. It's a thumbs up on YouTube. It's a heart on Twitter. It's just a like on
Facebook. I'm pretty sure it's a middle finger on Facebook, or most things are.
Give us a like on Facebook and Twitter. Give us a favorite there. Give us a wink on Scuttle. Give us a nod over on Chat.
Chat. Oh, that's where everybody posts pictures of their chapstick?
I think so.
Oh no, I'm making horrible social media jokes. We should probably adjourn.
What I love is that, like, I've got people with Scuttle before. I'm like, oh, give me a wink on Scuttle. And they're like, oh, what is that? And of course, Scuttle's like,
Sorry, I hate to interrupt the Scuttle thing. Here's an actual real one. You can find me on Stardust under Media Sandwich. if you happen to know what Stardust is.
So good. Okay, that's all for today. We'll be back someday.
We'll try to keep this a little more regular from now on. I'll be the one. I'll collect news stories to talk about, so we've always got something fairly topical, and we'll try to keep this a little bit more on the regular. And there'll always be Drat as well.
There will. All right, everyone, take care. Have a good day that this comes out.
Yeah, what did you think of the Nintendo Direct? You in the future, who's already seen it?
Who's already seen it? Because this won't come out tomorrow during the Direct. It'll come out days later.
It might come out tomorrow night if I'm really, really good.
We'll see. All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye. God, it's been that long. I'm clicking on older posts just to find our last episode.
Yep.